95.5 KLOS and KLOS HD1 Los Angeles. The anthem to the summer of love right there, released on Ringo's 27th birthday today in 1967. We want to welcome to Breakfast with the Beatles, Barry Livingston. Barry, good morning.
Such a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for
bucket list wishes to be on Breakfast with the Beatles.
Is that right? You said that. I couldn't believe it.
No,
I'm bucket list wishes.
I grew up in LA and I've grown up listening to the show, and you know, and the Beatles are just magic.
I kind of figured that out. I don't know Barry. We never met before, but we're Facebook friends, and I said, you know, I bet you Barry listens to the show when he's a Beatle fan. I just figured as much, you know?
It was such a thrill, and I'm going, I hope I'm not being punked by somebody. I said, Chris Carter is contacting me to be on Breakfast with the Beatles. I hope that's true, and here we are.
Here we are. So I was thinking about it, Barry. You were the Ringo of my three sons, you know? Right? I mean, you knew the family. You were asked to join. You know, became a member.
Right.
You were hanging around first before you were an official member. You know,
absolutely.
As a friend. And then you became one of the three sons, just like Ringo.
I didn't have the big nose.
No, you didn't.
No,
you're much handsome.
But I did have that. I did have the haircut, though, in the early days.
You did.
I had some sort of a bowl cut, which I think Jim Carrey stole from Dumb and Dumber.
And Fred McMurray, you know, was like the Brian Epstein and... you know, Uncle Charlie, Mal Evans, we can go on, you know, Doty, Billy Preston.
Saw this analogy before, but I like it.
Well, we try to link everything we possibly can to the Beatles here, you know.
Well, yes, the Beatles were huge in the 60s. We always fought with the producers and people because we wanted to have long hair, you know, and that was verboten in the mid-60s. We were just the typical Midwest family, and it was a struggle. Believe me, it was a battle nonstop to go, can we wear bell-bottom pants?
On in that great time, I'm probably the greatest time in the history of television in the mid to late 60s, where all of a sudden rock bands started to, you know, seep into every show. Even in the Munsters, you know, the Standells were in the Munsters, and like, all the shows had a, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies had a rock band would come move in.
Right. Well, we you know, they wanted to do a show that was somewhat of a nod to what was happening in the real world, which didn't happen a lot. My three sons, it was sort of, we were living in Pleasantville, but they asked us, they said, we're going to write a show, you know, with some, have a rock star come to Bryant Park, and they asked Stan and I, because, you know, they were busy producing Lawrence Welk. They had no idea what was going on. So of course the first person we said, well, we'd love to get, you know, Paul McCartney or George Harrison, and they're going, well, I don't think they're gonna. So then the other, we thought, Brian Jones, can you get Brian Jones?
Wow.
Of course we didn't realize, you know, how out there he was at that time.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have remembered his lines as
they
well.
They did get Jeremy Clyde of Chad and Jeremy, and he was...
He was always making the rounds, those guys, Chad and Jeremy.
I don't know what, you know, he was trying to get into a new career, a new acting thing, but he actually did an episode.
And we're talking about the television show My Three Sons, which has got a resurgence because of this great channel, MeTV, which is all we watch in the Carter household.
It really.
You know, my daughter's 11, and I say, you know, My Three Sons is on, and we're going to watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Dick Van Dyke, and, you know, The Odd Couple's a bit dodgy sometimes to show your 11-year-old daughter. I didn't realize there's a lot of gambling and strippers and things, but My Three Sons, definitely a favorite. So I said, you know, I said, Nicole's my daughter. I said, what if we got Ernie on the show with that? She's, oh, God, try to get Ernie, Dad, please. So there you go. I did it. And you've got a great book that's been out for a while. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, you know, the title, The Importance of Being Ernie. Not, there we go. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, you know, it's just my life through the whole My Three Sons era. Prior to My Three Sons, that I was a child actor. Started when I was about 4 or 5 years old in a film called Rally Round the Flag Boys with Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. That was my very first job.
That's the first one. And you were on Ozzie and Harriet.
I was in the Ozzie and Harriet for 3 years as a recurring character. My brother Stan, who played Chip on My Three Sons,
who our friend Gary just saw last night at the Turtles concert.
At the Turtles concert,
yeah,
really?
Paul Revere and the Raiders. Oh, they were all there. All the groups
getting around. Well, and then so I went on. Stan was already on playing Chip, and then I came on about the fourth year as, you know, I was the Ringo, kind of waiting for the call. I was hanging out in the bullpen, you know, and and as it turned out, the oldest son Mike, who was an actor, Tim Considine, left the show, and to preserve the three sons title, they had to have another son. So yeah. I was adopted as Ernie. And the book then goes past, you know, that into my life
as an
actor.
Yeah, I was mentioning you've been on Mad Men and a little movie called Argo
and The Social Network and Zodiac. We were just talking about that. And
so how does that work, Barry, when a movie like Argo wins all those awards? Do you get an award? I mean, how does that work?
There's a certificate, I think.
I get the paper.
My agent said something came in the mail for me, and I think it's some kind of an acknowledgement that you were actually in the movie. So it's, you know, great.
It's pretty cool. The gal that does our news here on Breakfast with the Beatles is Jackie DeShannon, opened for the Beatles in 1964, among other things. We were watching My Three Sons a couple of weeks back, and Jackie DeShannon was on. She lived next door to you with blonde girl with the guitar that Robbie kind of had on.
Jodie Foster was a recurring character on that show. You know, they had all kinds of Martin Sheen. I did an episode of a show called The Guardian, which is and Emilio was mm-hmm. directing, and he said, "Hey, you know," came and he said, "Oh, the old man says they say hi," and I'm going, "Old man, who the heck is he talking about?" And he goes, my dad, Martin, you know, he was on My Three Sons. And I was like, you're kidding, really? I mean, I was probably in my schoolroom doing algebra something that I didn't know. But he remembered. It was still, you know, very fresh in his memory. And I thought, well, how sweet, you know?
That's interesting. Speaking of schoolwork, where did you? Did you go to regular school?
I didn't go to school. I'm totally uneducated.
I could tell. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm still trying to catch up. I did have a studio teacher. My brother and I were the entire student body. We would go back to public school and take our licks. You know, I went to North Hollywood High, Millikan Junior High,
and
San Fernando Valley. And it was good, you know, toughened me up.
Very interesting. Now, since this is the Beatles show, Barry, we got to talk about the Beatles a little bit. And I asked Barry to pick out some of his favorites, and we're going to start with Paul McCartney, if that's okay.
Oh, good.
You selected Martha, My Dear as one of your choices.
When I play piano, and of course that's one of the songs that my teacher taught me. So I, you know, it's dear to my heart because it's actually something I can play and impress a lot of people at a party because I can do the
especially the beginning of it. Everybody knows that immediately.
It's iconic. Yeah. You know, and so
how long have you been playing?
I about 40 years, I guess, or so, maybe. I'm not, that would sound like I'd be really good.
I've been playing Martha, My Dear for 40 years.
I can
years
play
now.
That song so good because that's all I can play, really.
And Barry brought his son Spencer along, who's also a musician. What does Spencer play?
Spencer is, you know, he is a guitar player. He's a singer-songwriter. He's got a CD coming out, actually, July 13th, called Grow.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, on YouTube you can find...
How old are you, Spence? 24.
He's got a great ear. I'll tell you, when he was a kid, I drove him to school every day, and we would sit and, you know, turn on the radio, listen to the songs, and, you know, it would be the Pina Colada song would play, and you wouldn't hear Boo, you know, or you'd hear Tony Orlando, and then suddenly, you know, I Feel Fine would come on, and to him, it's the first time he'd ever hear something,
sure.
And he'd go, who is that? Or, you know, it'd be the Kinks, Sunny Afternoon, who is that? You know, and anytime my wife and I, any great song would come on from the 60s, you know, he could distinguish between what was kind of the poppy, mm-hmm. you know, sugar, and go, you wouldn't hear anything. But suddenly the Kinks, You Really Got Me, would go on, you'd hear that voice, and I go, who's that?
Credit that to your genes, because I say the same thing about my daughter. I'll play a song, I just want to see if she'll like it, one of my favorites, you know, just to see if she feels the same way. And just like you said, the songs I love, she loves. And the songs I don't like, she doesn't like. And that's interesting.
It's just, you know, it is maybe her inherited. He has got a great ear. In fact, there's a YouTube video, Have a Little Faith. You can find it. Spencer Livingston, Have a Little Faith. And it's a great, you know, introduction to the album called Grow. And it'll be out, available on iTunes and all the other places that you can, July 13th, right, Spencer?
Cool.
16th, July 16th.
Well, let's see if Spencer likes this song selected by his dad right here on Breakfast with the Beatles.
All right, that was Paperback Writer, Breakfast with the Beatles. This is Barry Livingston on KLOS.
Nice, nicely done. Why do you like that one?
You know, I love the riff.
Other than it's great.
I love the riff. The riff in that, I just, you know, it was, I think that followed up Day Tripper. And I just went, man, George, you know, I guess he came up with that. It just kills me every time. I got to crank it up just for the guitar
some
riff
great,
in that.
Some great bass playing, too.
Yeah, and it follows the riff. It's good.
Followed by Martha, My Dear. Barry Livingston's picks here as he's hanging with us. He's got a book out called The Importance of Being Ernie, from My Three Sons to Mad Men, A Hollywood Survivor Tells All. And if you have a question for Barry, 800-955-KLOS. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more No Switching, please.
Breakfast with the Beatles.
Well, if it isn't God's gift to the 8-year-olds.
On 95.5 KLOS, Southern California's best rock.
Take it, Chris. We are back hanging with Barry Livingston. Barry, thanks again for getting up so early on a Sunday morning. What time do you normally get up on a Sunday morning?
Sunday morning, you know, I've gotten to be a little earlier riser, like, you know, 9 maybe.
9?
You know? Yeah.
What time does he really get up, Spencer? What time does he get up?
Oh, you can't ask him. He's up at 1. you're asking
one
this guy?
1 p.m.? Is that right? Well, you're a musician, aren't you? That's right. Yeah. What time do you go to bed at night, Spencer?
4.
Wow, that's later than me.
He's a musician.
Great. So, Barry, you saw the Beatles live, yes?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Tell us about that concert experience.
We were actually at the beach, at Santa Monica Beach that day. And, you know, the Beatles, it was funny. It was an interesting transition. It was just before they became, you know, Revolver came out. They became much more And there was kind of a slight dip in their, not huge, they were still the biggest band of the world.
Right.
But, you know, it was like, oh, the Beatles are in town. Hey, you want to go see them tonight? Yeah, I think we ought to go see the Beatles. And the tickets were still available at Dodger Stadium.
Sure.
So, you know,
$350.
Yeah, we bought them and we had lousy seats, but we were there.
No, I would think you would have, you were a big star at that point. Wouldn't you be able to just call up somebody and get, you know, tickets?
No.
Right?
No. Not that big.
It didn't work that way.
No, not in my universe. So we went and it was, you know, still 45,000 people or whatever it was.
What do you remember the most about that night?
There was behind the dugout was a big like tent and it said dressing room on it, and I thought, okay, well, that's where the Beatles are. Of course, it wasn't, you know, they came out from the dugout.
It was just a ruse.
Second
right.
the show was over, they dropped their guitars, they ran into the tent, two limousines blasted out the back of the tent, streaked towards center field where a wall opened, and you could just see, you know, from where thousands of kids converging in the parking lot on that spot. The cars went out, they came, drove back in reverse. And the cars were just swarming with kids, all hanging all over them. And I mean, you know, I don't know how they got them off.
Did their parents bring them? I always wondered when I see all these little kids, right? There's never parents around them. They're like rows and rows of kids. And you think to yourself, do the parents just drop them off? All right, kids, go ahead, enjoy that. We'll wait for you out in the parking lot.
Yeah, I know. I thought there was a lot of, you know, by that time.
Who did you go with?
I went with my brother Stan, who was 16, 17
years
old. So he drove.
No parental authority.
No parental supervision whatsoever. We were eating as many Kulikus and root beers as we could gorge ourselves.
Gotta love the 60s, right? The kids are getting wild with root beer.
Yeah. No, it was Chip and Ernie out on the town that
now
night.
Now, Chip and Ernie go to see the Beatles. Now, what happens? That must be, I mean, back then you looked
like
Ernie.
We were a sideshow. Yeah, we were a sideshow. Nobody. If they did, nobody. It was an odd time to be on a television series because we sort of were still the poster children for the establishment.
Uh-huh.
When things, you know, was the summer of love and the hippies and, you know, drugs and drop out, tune in, turn in, drop out. You know, we were still, you know, La La Land in 19.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well,
Barry,
as it turns out, that was actually not a bad place to be because, you know, the producer. Producers, in their wisdom, they said, you know, no, you can't have long hair. You can't, because, you know, if we show this thing, styles change. They said in 5-10 years.
Styles change sometimes in one episode.
Actors change sometimes in one episode.
Tell me about that, not to interrupt where you were going. Fred McMurray, the star of the show, is it true that he would shoot like a whole season or, you know, like in a week or something like that? Because I do notice sometimes, you know, Robbie will have like blonde streaks in his hair and like 4 minutes later he's got black hair. And I'm like, what's going on there?
They had a system because he was a huge star and they lured him into doing a TV series. At that time, it was kind of a step down for a big
Fred
movie star to go to TV.
So
they said, you know, we'll give you half the universe and, you know, and you'll only work, instead of working all 7 months, which would take to do 30 episodes, whatever it means, you know, they would shoot all in 10 episodes a day. You'd be working just doing master shots with Fred McMurray and them, Steve. And, you know, there was plenty of other scenes in that script that he wasn't in, but they would just focus on those
scenes
that he was in and then his close-up. So then they would jump, you know, as soon as they got his the master shot with everybody in it, his close-up, they'd move on to the next scene. Could be in another, you know, another script. Could be in
so
more.
So 10 different episodes.
So you
that
could
had
be
completely different subject
storylines. Absolutely,
story
you could be totally different storylines. You know, as a kid, it
that
was all big one big storyline.
Must have been confusing.
Well, you know, for the old guys like William Frawley, who played Bub, and William Demarest, there was who writes this crap anyway? You're gonna never remember anything, you know. And they were always confused. And so, you know,
Charlie did look a bit confused at times.
Yeah. No, he was pretty cranky.
And he had a Beatle haircut, you know, like he had like the bangs going down. Not a good Beatle haircut,
no,
but like he did have one.
It was a little Claudius Caesar kind of thing.
With
had
a little mo from the Three Stooges
it was
in there.
Whatever
as well.
Fell off Fred McMurray's toupee, they swept up and kind of put it together and slapped it in his head. Yeah, he was kind of a crank, but sweet guy too. But it was crazy because then at the end of the year, like the very last week or two, they'd catch up on all the close-ups that you'd miss. So you could be working out of all 26 episodes in the kitchen. It would just be a close-up from and you know they
and that was the bluest kitchen I ever saw. Yeah. The refrigerator was blue. The tables were blue. The chairs. Everything was blue.
Even Uncle Charlie was blue.
Yes, you know, yes, absolutely.
it was a very blue household.
Getting back to the Beatles real quick here. Robbie wore Beatle boots. Did you notice? I check it out all the time. He occasionally is sporting a suede Beatle boot, a low cut.
He was the biggest pusher of let's update the fashions here. And in fact, I remember standing backstage one time, we were going to, and he was wearing the tightest cord
trousers
you've ever seen in your life. I mean, they were just skin tight. And McMurray, who was a very conservative guy,
sure,
goes, "Don, you know, those pants are so tight. How do you even get in them?" You know, and he said, "Well, Fred, I have them painted on."
Nice.
And I thought, ooh, nice, Don. I wouldn't have thought to say that. I thought that was perfect. But yeah, Don wanted the long hair. He wanted the corduroy pants and the Beatle boots. And we all did. But, you know, he got it more than we did.
Speaking of long hair, corduroy pants, and Beatle boots, we have a John Lennon song here from Revolver called "I'm Only Sleeping," a favorite of yours?
And Spencer's, yeah.
Spencer.
It just seems like such a John type of thing. That you know, I could see him sleeping all day, and that it just seems so John.
Let's play it. 95.5 KLOS. From 1966's Revolver, John Lennon's "I'm Only Sleeping," as we hang with Barry Livingston. Barry, want to take a phone call?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to line number two, engineer Mark. Is this Beatle Larry?
Yes, it is.
Thank Larry, you have a question for Barry?
Yeah, hi, Larry. This is Barry. This is Beatle Barry. The Beatle Larry.
Thank you very much. You know, Barry, most of your fans have fond memories of you and my three sons, but my memory is of a movie you did back in 1983 called High School USA. Do you remember being that movie?
Let's see. That 1983, 30 years, 20 years ago? What are we, 30 years ago?
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Oh, man. Yeah. Yes, I do recall that. It was all the child stars of the 80s, Michael J. Fox, Justine Bateman, I think, a few other people, were the students in a high school, and then the teachers were all of the child stars from a different generation, my generation, which was Tony Dow and Dwayne Hickman and me as the shop teacher. It was cute. It was actually very, very well
done.
Did
you like that movie, Larry?
Yes, I did, because I love how you played the auto shop teacher, and every line you almost had was always, "I hate this job," especially when the actor Steve Franken, who played Dr. Houtman, he spills the hot coffee on you, and you run up underneath him to grab a coffee pot so the coffee wouldn't fall on the floor. So
wow.
That's a fun.
Did you watch it last night, Larry? Did you really recall scenes vividly?
Yes. That's one of my favorite movies, and I have that saved. And I when Chris said he wanted to take phone calls, I couldn't resist calling. So
fantastic!
I want to thank you for taking my phone call.
Hey, appreciate that, and thanks for remembering something that you know from my long, long career. That's it's a fun little movie.
There you go, Barry. You've now met Beatle Larry. Fantastic. You know, speaking of, you know, child actors, I don't want to blow smoke, as they say, Barry, but you're my favorite child actor. I think you're not my favorite because, you know, just a personal thing, but I think you were just the best actor as a kid with adults. You handled adults just brilliantly. Your dialogue with Fred McMurray, everybody, you know, Lucy, no matter who you were with.
I got the best lines.
You
know,
were
that
one cool
helped.
Cat as a kid. I mean, you know. What was it like? Now, you're a small guy, right?
Yeah. And,
you know,
yeah. About 5'5".
I didn't mean in height.
Yeah, I know.
But you're remembering all these lines. I mean, gosh, My Three Sons, you were on for what, 8 years? The show was on 12 years, you were on 8 years.
Exactly.
It's a lot of shows.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you got to remember all this dialogue. They didn't have cue cards, right?
No.
I mean, you had to remember everything. As a kid, how do you remember all these lines? I mean, you got so much other stuff going on. You're busy growing up and, you know.
You know, you train yourself. I mean, not that it was an effort. I mean, just it you know, I'd work with my dad the night before.
Right.
And the method was I would read it. He'd read it back with me. I'd read it. And then he would just test me to see if, you know, how much of it I retained. And usually about 4 or 5 times through, I'd retain it.
And your brother, same thing?
Same thing, yeah. You know, and then, you know, sometimes if they did a rewrite on the set the next day or something, you'd be, oh, I'm a little wobbly now.
Sure, sure.
But it's almost like a muscle. And the more you exercise that memory muscle, it's just, you know, came natural to me. I mean, I couldn't do, you know, my wife is in the medical profession. I could, you know, for the life of me, I couldn't remember any of that stuff. But
right.
I can remember, you know, the dialogue in a soda shop or something, you
right,
know, that
right.
that kind of stuff.
Were mom and dad in show business at all?
Parents were movie theater owners in Baltimore, mm-hmm. In the Depression era. And my mother was a dancer. You know, she was a fan dancer. Quite frankly.
I mean, so is Mark's. You have something in common.
Well, there you go. But, you know, it's in the book. And it was always kind of funny because he was always referred to as a dancer. And I always thought, oh, you know, Kiev Ballet. There.
Sure.
But no, she, you know, strut around stage with feathers and some creepy guy in the side beating a drum. And I go, well, that's kind of interesting. That explained a lot. You
wow.
Because my mother was a pretty salty, everyone loved her. She was she was wild and unhinged and unfiltered in her language. So you know, when I found out what she really did as a profession, and she met my dad who owned the movie theaters, and that was their that's my showbiz history.
Hey, read about that story and many more in The Importance of Being Ernie, which Barry was nice enough to bring in some copies of his book, which we're gonna make him sign. And I'll tell you what, I'll give caller number, pick a number,
4.
Caller number 4 at 800-955-KLOS. Get yourself an autographed copy of The Importance of Being Ernie. And real quick, just tell me about Mad Men, because it's such an interesting show. And, you know, all us 60s aficionados, you know, we watch it for every little detail. Mm. And, you know, they use Tomorrow Never Knows to close one show and
right.
the Monkees' Porpoise song a few weeks back. You were on Mad Men in the very, very beginning. Tell us how you got that gig and what that was like.
Well, you know, I was in maybe episode 3 or 4, and it was before the show actually had aired. They were filming them, and they hadn't had
so they had yet. No idea that
yeah.
this was going to be this.
And I was Dwayne Davis. I was a guy in the art department, a graphic designer, and just sort of a nebbishy, oddball character that they kept
right.
in the back room with a drafting table. And I would say what was fun was having to learn the dances. We had a one scene where we're supposed to go to a bar afterwards and dance. In fact, my dance partner, people might know the actress who plays Flo in the progressive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's
on TV more than any other human being.
She's the richest woman in showbiz right now, I'm sure, from all that. But she was my dance partner. And that was the funny thing was we had to go do some rehearsals to learn the cha-cha and, you know, the twist, that, you know, to do it actually as it was.
Right.
And Matt Weiner, who came down to watch us, none of the actors at that time had become stars. The show hadn't aired. Nobody knew who I was. And when I do a show, you know, episodic or a film, you
right.
know, I don't say I used to be on My Three Sons. Keep
no,
quiet
right,
about
right,
it.
Right.
So nobody knew who I was, and that's fine. Although Matt Weiner watched the rehearsals, and then he kind of went up to a couple of, and then he passed me by, and everyone, when the showrunner's on the set, everyone's eyes kind of see where he's going to go because he's the star maker. So he walked up to me and he goes, I know who you are. And suddenly you could see all eyes went like, well, who is that guy?
Who is that guy?
Because I don't look like Ernie anymore. And most of those kids that were on the show probably, you know, too young to watch it.
Right.
Everyone
right.
went to IMDb, you know, got their iPhones out. And, oh, okay. That's who he is. And
that's Ernie Douglas,
yeah.
who has selected this next song from John Lennon's Imagine album, Gimme Some Truth, one of the best. This was written back when he was a Beatle. A lot of people don't realize.
Spencer and I kind of looked it up on YouTube, and there is a version
with
of
John
it.
And Paul
John
singing
and
it.
Paul and
working
it,
out the words.
I went, wow, that's it's universal. That song today is as pertinent just in terms of its lyrics and what it's saying about life as it was 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, in 20 years, 30 years from now, it'll be important.
And it features a great solo from George Harrison. So it's really half the Beatles.
Yeah. I was wondering, did Ringo play drums on that? Or
he
was that?
Did not. Okay. Otherwise, it would have been a hat trick there.
Yeah.
Here's John Lennon from 1971. John Lennon, George Harrison, and Heavy Friends from 1971's Imagine. Give Me Some Truth, one of Barry Livingston's picks here.
Yeah.
As Barry's hanging with us, we want to congratulate Beatles Zane, the proud owner of The Importance of Being Ernie autograph. So you got to autograph this to Zane, Barry. If
I will certainly
convince you to do that. Something you want to ask Barry? 800-955-KLOS is our number. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more. No switching, please.
Hello, this is Homer here, and you're listening to Breakfast with the Beatles on 95.5 KLOS. My favorite radio show playing music from my favorite band. And as I always said, our Beatles are better than England's Rolling Stones.
We laugh every time we hear that, Barry. We are hanging with Barry Livingston, Ernie from My Three Sons, among other things. And Barry, you know, it is Ringo's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Ringo. Love you.
Who's your favorite Beatle, by the way?
George Harrison.
George Harrison.
Yeah.
Which is great because we have a song we're going to play right after this one that you selected, Barry. But because it is Ringo's birthday, we're going to check in with the Bon Bons, who asked the question, what's wrong with Ringo?
Was there something?
1964, the Bon Bons. So, what's wrong with Ringo?
So was that song written by Pete Best by any chance?
Barry Livingston, I don't think so, but it very well could have been. Pete Best made records too, you know, like right after that. When he got, you know, asked to leave. There, you know, there was the Pete Best combo, and there was like a song called Pete's Theme, and there was like they did songs that the Beatles covered. It was very interesting. And,
I met him a couple times at an autograph show, and you know he's surprisingly unbitter after all that. Mm-hmm. And I think he finally got a taste of some pretty big money when they put the anthology series out.
That was the first time he saw a Beatle payday.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about Pete Best that we always talk about is we had him on as a guest once, and we said, you know, Pete, over the years, have you ever spoken to any of the guys? You know, did you ever get a phone call from Paul McCartney in the middle of the 80s or something, just saying, hey, you know, never spoke to any of the Beatles since 1962. I just can't believe that, you know, but I guess they just don't know what to say.
I would think it would be so awkward, you know. I mean, what an extreme.
But you know, as time goes by, these guys, you know, but never, you know. Yeah. I mean, Paul and Ringo are still around, and so is Pete Best, and there's no
contact. Because they were childhood friends. I mean, beyond the professional connection of the Beatles, they were buddies, they were mates. And you would think it just had ended horribly, and it did, you know.
Well, hey, we have another question on line two. We were wondering if you would mind talking to one of our listeners, sure. Barry.
Sure.
Go on.
Karen.
Hi, Barry. Nice to meet you. And I just want to let you know that you were the precocious and adorable one on the show.
I thought that was William Frawley.
Oh, no. That definitely wasn't William.
A bub comment.
Yeah, and I was wondering, was he as crotchety to work with as William Demarest was?
Demarest was a little more cross. I would say Frawley was completely unfiltered, uncensored. You know, I'd hit the floor laughing when he'd start swearing, and it was great when you're 10, 9 years old and an adult loses it in a very eloquently vulgar way. It was quite amusing. Yeah, it was great.
When Fred Mertz loses it.
You got to work with so many cool people. That's totally awesome. And I'm a major fan, have been watching your show ever since it was around, along with all the other shows, and I agree with Chris. I love me and all the old shows. I'm glad they brought back because I'd rather be watching them than a new one.
Hey, Karen, do you have Barry's book?
No, I don't, and I'd love to have it.
Well, let's ask him if he'll give you an autographed copy. Barry, what do you think?
I think Karen should have one, yes.
Karen said enough nice things about you.
You read my book, and then you go, oh, that guy, he's not
right,
the person.
Stay on hold, all right, Karen? Stay on hold, and we'll take care of you. Luis will take all your information.
Maybe I ran into you over the years. Who knows?
Well, hopefully you weren't driving. All right, well, thank you so much. Barry, you have a selection here, a deep track an album cut, as they say, yes. from George Harrison. When
George.
You sent me your list, I was so pleased to see this song.
You know, and I heard this, and you're the expert on this. I read somewhere that George wrote this for Bob Dylan.
It's correct.
That, yeah.
About him disappearing.
After his motorcycle accident.
Exactly.
And it kind of gave them the boost to get back into the you know, life and become an active artist again.
And it features the late, great Pete Drake on steel guitar.
That's why I love pedal steel.
Yeah.
I love pedal steel.
So let's spin it. Is Mark on the phone? Hold on. Hi, Mark.
I'm here.
We're going to play a song from George Harrison's sprawling 3-record set, All Things Must Pass. Is that in your future?
Yes.
Let's see. Lovely. From All Things Must Pass, George Harrison. Behind that locked door, selected by Barry Livingston. That was a nice selection.
Oh, you know, George cannot do any wrong in my book, you know, and he's not in my book, but, you know, don't.
Maybe the next one.
The next one. Well, there's another volume. But hey, man, you know, I would love to hear, if you have it, the George Harrison version of It Don't Come Easy, because most people know that's a Ringo song, but
that's
George
right.
apparently was the author of it, and
you
I
know,
hear
we,
there's
we
a great...
We actually might have that version, Engineer Mark. Do we?
Yes.
Do we? We do. This is great. We never figured this out. We kind of figured it out. George probably wrote the song for Ringo, and then...
Yeah.
With the guide vocal, you know, Ringo,
right.
this is
right.
how you sing it.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure Ringo probably wrote a few of the lyrics, but music, definitely.
Yeah.
G.H.
Yeah.
And here he is singing 95.5 KLOS. It don't come easy at all,
wow.
courtesy of George Harrison. Steven Stills is on that track
really?
Well, and members of Badfinger. Now, if you listen, we were kind of talking about
Badfinger,
the Hare Krishnas were real loud in there. And on Ringo's version, he said, I don't want those Hare Krishnas. So you don't hear them.
I saw Badfinger once. I saw Badfinger, and it was a really crazy show. The opening act was Pure Prairie League. The second act, actually the very first guy was Billy Joel, who was doing impressions of people, and he did Little Help of My Friends, did a bunch of, and then Pure Prairie League came out and played, and then Badfinger was the headliner.
Where was this?
This was a place out in the San Fernando Valley, and it was called the Valley Convention Center. It's now the Jehovah Witness Hall, I think. I'm driven by there in a while.
It was the Theater in the Round.
Yeah, it was Theater in the Round. I saw Woody Allen there, and his last
really?
Tour, and the opening act was Leo Cut. No, who's the guy who died in the plane crash? A Time in a Bottle?
Jim Croce.
Jim Croce was the opening
Wait,
act.
It was
that.
Jim Croce and Woody Allen?
And Woody Allen.
That's a concert.
That was crazy. I think
Do
it was
you have
the,
that ticket stub?
I think it might have been the last time that Woody, he was doing movies. I think Sleeper had come out, and it was probably his last circuit of doing live stand-up.
Interesting.
And it was circling around, so he finished his act, just dropped the microphone and ran up the aisle. Because
you don't know where to leave when you're in the round. You're like, where do I get off the stage?
Yeah, he couldn't go down below. He couldn't, you know, he just ran for it. It's funny.
Interesting. Memories with Barry Livingston. You gotta love it. Hey, one of our listeners, Larry, called in and wanted to know if you'd autograph your last book for Larry. What do you think? Yeah?
Larry,
yeah,
we'll
do
Beta Larry.
Beta Larry.
I think
yeah,
I talked
we should
to Beta
do
Larry.
Yeah,
sure.
He's a good guy. It's a high school movie. His favorite movie of all time. So he deserves a book,
get
right?
Get out a little more. see a few more flicks.
Gee, I'm so sorry. It's 12 noon. It's, you know, this is when we start playing Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith, which was nothing wrong with that. I want to thank Engineer Mark. Great job, Mark. I want to thank my mom for the news this week.
We
she
heard
did a
her
wonderful
this
job.
Did a nice job.
Barry Livingston, The Importance of Being Ernie, From My Three Sons to Mad Men, A Hollywood Survivor Tells All. And you did survive, and you're great, and thank you so much
I
for coming
appreciate
out
it.
Here.
Appreciate it so much for having me. It's been a blast, man.
And your son, Spence. Thank
Spence,
you.
Yeah, and his coming. Album's coming out, Grow, July 13th, I think, right?
You gotta love it.
In
we
July
want to thank
sometime.
Mike Sinclair for the news and the coffee, Luis Lopez for everything you do, brother Luis, Gary Strobel for walking around with the camera. My name is Chris Carter. Happy birthday, Ringo. We'll leave you with this
Happy
from the
birthday,
White
Ringo.
Album.
Love you, man.